Is the glass half empty or is it half full? You see, all of us have an emotional and mental grid through which we process everything that happens in our lives, right? So we pass all of our insights, our decisions, our feelings, our observations through this grid. Now, this grid is made up of certain assumptions about life, and these assumptions are maybe either fundamentally positive or fundamentally pessimistic. Now, some of us then are glass half full kind of people, and some of us are glass half empty kind of people. You probably have both kinds of people where you work. You maybe even have both kinds in your own family. And there are certainly both kinds of people in the church. Now, you've probably seen a bell curve, right? It's a statistical graph showing where people fit with others in relationship to a given issue. And it's called a bell curve because it's shaped like a bell. And it's shaped that way because the majority of people fall somewhere in the middle, all right? So most of us, we're not glass half empty or glass half full, you know, most of the time. We fall somewhere in the middle. Some situations we are optimistic, other situations maybe we're more pessimistic. But on any issue, including this one, you're going to have 5 to 20% of people who are at the leading edge of this bell curve, all right? They are optimistic people. Then at the tail edge of this bell curve, you're going to have another 5 to 20% of your people who are basically cynical in their outlook on life. All right. Now, you glass half full people, they're fundamentally positive, all right? They focus on what they have. They hope for the best. They're generally optimistic about the future. They tend to assume the best about other people and about circumstances, all right? And your motto is kind of like, again, but we did it that way last week. Let's do something new, different, exciting, right? But then you glass half empty people, you have a much more cynical outlook. All right, you look at the world through darkly tinted glasses. For you, every silver lining has a cloud. You expect the worst. You tend to be suspicious of people and doubtful of circumstances, and you can be pessimistic about the future. Well, one of Jesus' disciples was a glass half empty kind of person. All right, now, his name is Thomas, and in the New Testament, in the Gospels, he has a nickname. He's called the Twin. So he was probably a twin brother. Now, we don't know anything about his brother or his sister, but he was the Twin. But we've come to know him by a totally different nickname, right? If you grew up in church, you know him as Doubting Thomas. How would you like to be known throughout history by your doubtful nature? Now, he earned this moniker when he refused to believe in the resurrection of Jesus, even when all of the other followers had seen Jesus with their own eyes. He refused to believe it until he could see for himself. But it isn't just this one instance which Thomas displays this cynical outlook on life. Most of the time, when we see Thomas in the New Testament, he's finding the worst in a situation. So let's just walk through some of these this morning. All right, the first is in John chapter 11. This is one of the more famous chapters in the New Testament. This is the resurrection of Lazarus. But this involves some of the events leading up to it. All right, Jesus and his disciples, they're in a whole different part of the country where Jesus has been teaching and doing his ministry. Now, it's getting late in Jesus' ministry, right? The time for his crucifixion is drawing near. In fact, the winds of change are already blowing. The Jewish leaders are conspiring. The last time that Jesus and his disciples had gone to the area of Jerusalem, they tried to kill him. Right? They tried to stone him. Now, Jesus was able to miraculously escape, but that event left an indelible mark in Thomas. Now, Jesus has just received word that their good friend Lazarus has died, and he announces that they're going to go back to his hometown of Bethany, which is right next door to Jerusalem. And listen to how Thomas responds. Then he told them plainly, this is Jesus talking, "Lazarus is dead. And for your sake, I'm glad I wasn't there, because this will give you another opportunity to believe in me. Come, let's go see him." Thomas, nicknamed the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let's go too and die with Jesus." To return to Jerusalem now would be to walk right into the face of the enemy. And Thomas knows it, right? He knows they're walking into a hornet's nest. They're going to be poking it, and he doesn't like it one bit. Now, Thomas is just being realistic here, right? He recognizes the danger. But his statement is also just dripping with pessimism, right? He's fearful. And rather than seeing the power of Jesus, including his miraculous escape the last time, he focuses on the dark side of the possibilities. And that's what dominates his thinking. And make no mistake, this is not a statement of courage, as if Thomas was saying, "Yeah, Lord, we'll go with you, even if we have to die." Right? That kind of bold statement was Peter's department. Thomas, let's give him credit. He was sincere, all right? He was resigning himself to going, even though he fully expected to die. He was sincere, even if he was a pessimist. The second story we're going to look at comes from John chapter 14, and we see Thomas's skeptical side show once again. This time the scene is the famous upper room, all right? Jesus has washed the disciples' feet. He has modeled for them the power of serving. Jesus has just shared his last Passover meal with them, and he's instituted what we've come to know as the Lord's Supper or communion. And he's announced that one of them would betray him. He now shares that he is going to prepare a place for them. But even after 3 years of following Jesus, of living with him, of learning from him, Thomas still doesn't get it. Here's Jesus talking. "Don't be troubled. You trust God, now trust in me. There are many rooms in my Father's home, and I am going to prepare a place for you. If this were not so, I would tell you plainly. When everything is ready, I will come and get you so that you will always be with me where I am. And you know where I am going and how to get there." "No, we don't, Lord," Thomas said. "We haven't any idea where you are going, so how can we know the way?" Jesus told him, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." Did you hear all those negative words that Thomas used? Right? No, don't, haven't, can't. Right? Those are the favorite words of a glass half empty kind of person. Right? If you're not sure what your fundamental outlook on life is, then just listen to your basic vocabulary. Right? It will give you away. Then in the most famous story involving Thomas, in John chapter 20, this is the passage that he earns the nickname Doubting Thomas. Jesus has risen from the dead, right? He first appeared to some of them, right? Word quickly ripples through the believing community. Then Jesus appears to more of them, and the ripples quickly turn into tidal waves of joy and exuberance. Well, that is except for Thomas. For whatever reason, Thomas wasn't around when Jesus appeared these other times. Maybe he was so disillusioned that he had gone off by himself to try to make sense of everything. But this time Thomas is with the others and they're sharing their exciting news, but Thomas refuses to believe it. Here's what it says. One of the disciples, Thomas, nicknamed the twin, was not with the others when Jesus came. They told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he replied, "I won't believe it unless I touch the nail wounds in his hands and put my fingers into them and place my hand into the wound in his side." 8 days later, the disciples were together again, and this time Thomas was with them. The doors were locked, but suddenly, as before, Jesus was standing among them, and he said, "Peace be with you." And then he said to Thomas, "Put your fingers here and see my hands, right? Put your hand into the wound in my side. Don't be faithless any longer. Believe." "My Lord and my God," Thomas exclaimed. Then Jesus told him, "You believe because you have seen me. Blessed are those who haven't seen me, but believe anyway." Now, Thomas displays a characteristic trademark of glass half empty people. They want it all spelled out. They want every question answered. Every I must be dotted. Every T must be crossed. And they want absolute proof, right? Before they make any step, they want evidence that it's hard and fast before they commit, right? And they want to play it safe. They try to avoid every risk. Now, notice that Jesus doesn't condemn Thomas for his attitude, but he does say that others will be blessed if they believe without seeing. See, here's the thing. There are times when you need to step in faith. There are times that you need to move and make a move, even when all your questions aren't answered, right? There is no such thing as faith without risk. Faith, however, means trusting God with that risk, right? Faith isn't being risky and doing something foolish just for the sake of being risky, right? It's not some sort of, you know, spiritual thrill seeking. It's doing what God has called us to do, even when we can't see the way, right? It is trusting God with that risk. So faith is a calculated risk, and it's calculated on the wisdom, the love, the power, and the knowledge of God. And you will not grow if you do not learn to take steps of faith. A church will not grow spiritually or numerically if they don't take some risks. Have you ever watched trapeze artists? It's fascinating. Henry Nguyen tells the story about the Flying Rodleys, a family of trapeze artists in a German circus. Now, a trapeze act requires at least two people, all right? A flyer and a catcher. And the flyer, as you might expect, is the one who goes flying through the air, all right? Flipping and twisting. And then the catcher is the one who must catch them. Now, the scary part is this, that the flyer has to let go of the bar long before they're ever in the secure grasp of the catcher. And so when the flyer's swinging out, all right, when they approach the furthest approach of their swing, they have a key decision to make. Do I let go of the security of the one to grab hold of the security of the other? All right, and this isn't a decision they can spend a long time thinking about, because if the flyer waits until the next time, she's going to swing back out there, but on the next swing out, she isn't going to go as far. She is going to be further away from her goal. And after a few swings, she'll be at a standstill, stuck, going nowhere. And how many of us are stuck at a standstill in life because we are too afraid to let go of our earthly securities, all right? We're afraid of letting go and flying through the air, just trusting that God will catch us. Here's the thing, though. Rodley, the leader of this trapeze troupe, explained to Henry Nguyen, he says, the star of the show is Joe, my catcher. Right? He has to be there with split-second precision and grab me out of the air as I come to him in the long jump. And Rodley goes on to explain, the secret is, listen to this, the secret is the flyer does nothing and the catcher does everything. When I fly to Joe, I simply have to stretch out my arms and hands and wait for him to catch me. The catcher must catch and the flyer must trust. Wow. Sometimes we have to let go of whatever earthly bar of security that we're hanging on to and just trust that God is going to catch us, right? That bar of security, it might be money, it might be a certain place, it might be a certain relationship, it might be an image that we have of ourselves or an image that we want everybody else to have of us. But if we don't learn to let go, right, we're never going to learn to fly. And we're never going to hold on to Jesus. Thomas learned how to fly, right? Yeah. Thomas was a glass half empty kind of a person. His fundamental view of life was pessimistic. And yet Thomas was an apostle of Jesus. He was chosen by Jesus. He was faithful. He helped form the foundation of the church, a follower of Christ. And church history tells us that Thomas took the gospel to India and established the church there. And like most of the others, he too died a martyr's death, falling mortally wounded from a sword. And yet God was able to take this man with a fundamentally pessimistic view of life and make a positive difference. Right? Jesus taught this naysayer how to say yes. Now let me talk to you glass half empty people out there for just a few moments. And I say this with this confession that I think many times in my own life, I'm one of you, all right? That can be my default position. Now, last week I mentioned that all of our personality traits can be good or bad, depending on how you display them. Now, glass half empty people, right, are valuable assets to any family, to any employer, and to any church, provided they learn how to display their personality in a positive way. And maybe that sounds like a contradiction, displaying a negative personality in a positive way. But it's true. And not only do you who are glass half empty people need to realize this, but you people over here on the other end of the bell curve, you glass half full people need to recognize this as well, because it can be very easy for you to judge them and maybe disregard the positive things they bring to the table. But the number one benefit of a glass half empty person is that, well, they keep us honest, right? They keep the church honest because they ask the tough questions. And by asking honest questions, they demand honest answers. And this has the effect of exposing false motives. Right? Now, I have read with horror over these recent weeks the scandal involving Ravi Zacharias, who had been, in recent decades, one of the greatest defenders, one of the greatest apologists for the Christian faith. And yet we find out that throughout his whole career, he was doing horrific things. And the thing is that there were red flags, there were warning signs that were there the whole time, but people just chose to ignore them. And I wonder if that whole ministry could have been spared. I wonder if somebody could have intervened in Ravi's life early on, if there had been a glass half empty sort of person who would have been there to ask some tough questions to keep him and to keep the organization honest. But everyone look the other way. Everyone didn't want to believe it. Everybody wanted to assume the best and not the worst. And nobody asked those questions until it was too late. And so a glass half empty person can ask those tough questions, because unfortunately in the church, sometimes there are those who are pursuing their own agenda, or they get caught up, you know, Satan entices them and tempts them, and they get trapped. And they might be able to fool most everyone else, but you have that one person who asks the tough questions, and sometimes it saves the church from doing something stupid or making a bad hire or wasting a ton of money. Number two, someone like a Thomas can actually foster understanding, because when you ask good questions, good explanations must be given, right? And there are some ideas that sound good at first, right? But upon closer examination, it becomes obvious there are more problems, more issues than maybe we first realized. And so you need these glass half empty people to ask these questions so an idea is thought out thoroughly and that the church is well planned and well prepared. The number three positive of a glass half empty sort of person is that they guard the church against rash action. All right, keeping a church from just charging off to the deep end, all right? Because if you left it up to the people up here at the leading edge of the bell curve, all right, the church would charge headlong after one half-witted idea after another without pausing long enough to do any planning or preparation, all right? There are some of us that will chase after any harebrained idea, all right? And it can be hard for them to tell the difference between taking a step of faith and jumping off of a cliff. Right? And that's where the glass half empty kind of people come in. They bring the wisdom and discernment to know the difference. Now, fourthly, these people can act as a conscience, right? Churches can easily do the wrong thing for the right reason, and we can do the right thing, but for the wrong reason. And a spirit-led glass half empty person, and yes, that's right. Glass half empty people can be spirit-led just like anyone else. But these kind of people can then make sure that we're doing the right thing for the right reason, right? Walter Underwood says that doubts are the ants in the pants of faith. Now, that being said, it's not all rainbows and unicorns for you glass half empty Thomases out there, because there are some downsides to this personality type as well. And you need to be aware of what these negatives are so you can be on guard against them. And the first danger of a glass half empty kind of person is that they can hinder the church, right? Moving forward with caution is a good thing, all right? But when you quit moving forward at all out of an overabundance of fear, that's not a good thing. And sometimes when the glass half empty people have too much say, when the naysayers get too much say, too much influence, the church can end up screeching to a halt. Right? Asking tough questions and needing honest answers is a good thing. But then there are those who just become a horse's patootie, but they believe that they're doing the Lord's holy work. But let me be clear, there is no such thing as a spiritual gift of being a negative Nelly. Nobody ever put, "We can't do that," on a motivational poster. Number two, a glass half empty personality has the danger that they don't step out in faith. Right? There is the real danger of being so cautious with every step you take that you never take a step. Right? You end up relying completely on human vision. You never see beyond the horizon of human possibility. And so you never trust God and step out. The third danger of a glass half empty Thomas that can bring to the church is that it can sow division and cause discontent. I mean, think about it. If Thomas's response to everything is, "Well, let's go and die," or "We don't know how to do that," what kind of effect does that have on everyone else, right? And if someone's response to every announcement, every decision, every program is to say something negative, right? That only stirs up discontent, dissatisfaction, and division. Number four, this personality type can discourage the efforts of others. Right? If they're always throwing cold water on the vision of others, when there's too much of that, here's what happens. All right. The glass half full people, the people on this end of the bell curve, all the creative and visionary types, right, they're going to get sick of being shot down every time they try to do something. And eventually they're going to pack their bags and go somewhere else. You cannot grow a church with just glass half empty kind of people. You just can't. There's no faith without risk. Sometimes that means we risk our time, we risk our effort, we risk our money. Sometimes we risk our reputation, you know, being laughed at and made fun of by others, all in an order to follow Jesus and do what he says. The problem is that so often those are the things that we cling to for security. That's our bar that we hold on to. And it can be hard to let go so that we can fly into the arms of our Savior. If you want to hold on to Jesus and you want to be held securely in his grasp, you're going to have to let go of some of these other things. All right, when Peter walked on water, he first had to get out of the boat. All right, to get to Canaan, Abraham first had to leave the land of his fathers and go to a land that he didn't know. He'd never been there before. To get to the promised land, Israel first had to leave Egypt and then go through the wilderness. And Thomas had to learn to stop doubting and start trusting. A naysayer had to learn to say yes to Jesus. So let today be the day that you let go and fly and trust that Jesus will catch you. Thank you, and God bless.